Welcome to Machinist Therapy Hotline. This is episode 20. And of course, because it's episode 20, we have our special guest on the show who we'll introduce in a minute. But first of all, we need to make sure that we have the ultimate team available, ready to do this show. Tony Closer.
Here and accounted for, sir.
Shane Poole.
Guten Tag.
Albert Rosinski.
Hello, machinists.
And me, Jody, the motherfucking Tuckwell. So, without further ado, let's get on with the podcast. Well, this is the episode, boys. We've got Sun Tran, who is the owner of Impact Tech, who basically knows how to do wheelies in his undies without crashing and produces some of the best crash motorcycle parts that you have ever seen. Is that a fair assumption?
Sounds about right.
Okay. Whew. Jeepers.
That was scary for a minute.
That was scary. I was going to sort of go into how, you know, he produces these amazing products for stunt riders and freestylers with crash cages and race rails and, you know, maybe a few fat pegs to throw in. But, you know, I didn't want to go too overboard. So there will be, for whatever reason, there will be some people out there that have never actually met you before, like me. And so it would be really good if you introduced yourself and told us a little bit about what you do, and then we'll sort of dive in from there. How about that?
Sounds good.
Okay. So over to you.
Well, my name is Sun Tran. I'm 34. I am first generation Vietnamese kid in America. Wouldn't be here. It was for my parents leaving Vietnam during the war. So I guess I got to do something with my life. And here we are, making stunt cages and machining stuff.
So first generation Vietnamese, or is that now second generation? Is that for, if your parents left?
First.
Is that, right.
Okay. I would be the first one born here.
Gotcha. Okay. I think we should sort of jump into that a little bit more further down the track. But why don't you tell us about your experience as a manufacturer and how you got to the point where you're at now? Like, where did it begin? What was the point for you to go, okay, this is what I want to do as my career?
Well, I guess we should ask him first. I mean, obviously, motorcycles is his passion. Why don't we rewind a little bit more and say, you know, I mean, what'd you do? Did you start riding dirt or street first?
And yeah, good call.
Yeah, what type of bikes?
I started riding dirt first. Of course, I always wanted to ride bikes, but, you know, Asian parents don't do that kind of stuff. They want me to read books, encyclopedias, that kind of thing, you know. But luck would have it, when I turned 18, I was able to have my own money and buy my dirt bike. But I started on dirt, rode dirt for maybe 2 years. And that's when an opportunity for a street bike came up. And it was one of my friends. He was like, hey, man, I'm getting married. Got a kid on the way. Wife says this thing's got to go. And I was like, wow, well, what you got? I looked it up. It was a 2002 R6, and this was in 2005, so solid 15 years ago. And this I saw, and I was like, wow, I guess I'm ready for a street bike, because, you know, I'm Asian. I should have one of those anyways.
I was going to say that, actually. I didn't want to be the first, but I was going to say it.
You were going to stereotype him as being one of the crazy 88s off Kill Bill, weren't you?
I was supposed to be.
Albert didn't know what the fuck I was talking about.
And no, I knew exactly what you're talking about. I just more thought like Fast and the Furious, like Johnny Tran, maybe like that was what his aspirations were. But I just wanted to be a good listener and listen to his story. So
Yeah.
So let's rewind a little bit further, because where did I just have $5,000 laying around just buy this motorcycle, right? I'm like 19 years old.
That was my question. Exactly.
Drugs. Absolutely. I'm a visionary of the future. And you know,
smart.
It all started in this little Chinese restaurant I worked for in high school. You know, I was just washing dishes and shit. And one of the cooks came up to me. He's like, "Hey, man, can you get me some weed?" And I was like, "I think I can." So I got him some weed. Long story short, I started selling weed to the entire restaurant. And then this was before, you know, all the dispensaries and shit's legal now.
Right. So
I didn't even feel like I was doing anything wrong then, because it's just weed. You get high, you get hungry, no big deal. And you laugh. Everything's funny. So I started my illustrious drug career there.
Oh, my Lanta. Here we go.
But, you know,
which is honestly every restaurant. Like everyone there's doing something. Yeah.
I mean, it could have got worse. I could have like started dealing heroin too, but I drew the line at marijuana.
Thank God.
Hey, it is what it is. So then,
how much, you know, sell it for a good price or?
Oh yeah, but then like I had the connection, so my shit was good, and everybody knew that. So I did that on the side of, you know, going to school, doing nothing, because I didn't even know what I was going to school for. Community college at the time. And that wraps into right about then. I bought the street bike. Now we go get to where, you know, I bought the street bike because, you know, friend comes up to me and I'm like, of course, I'll buy that thing. It's like the best thing that ever happened to me. When I got my, what's that?
I can relate, man. I'm just listening. This is good. I like where this is going.
So I got the bike. I literally was lying to people, telling them I was busy, but all I was doing was just riding this motorcycle because it was so fun. And I literally didn't get off it for like a month. And of course, you know, you got to learn how to wheelie.
Now, I got to stop you right there. This is key, because now I've been riding. Well, I started with BMX, and then I rode dirt bikes, and I learned how to ride dirt bikes good, and I rode wheelies, and that was my goal. I watched Doug DeMoco, the Wheelie King, ride wheelies all the time, and so I went out one day and said, I'm going to learn how to ride wheelies from first gear all the way through sixth. I'm at 125, and I went through a bunch of silencers after looping out and chasing after my motorcycle over and over again, but that was in a dirt field, and I went through a few back fenders and a few grips and some bent bars, but I got through it, I dealt with it, and I started doing one-handed wheelies, and it was awesome, but I never had the balls. I mean, I tried, but I never had the balls to do it on the street too much, because the street is not forgiving. And after a few times of stretching out my chain on my katana and then going and buying some new ones, I'm like, you know, this just is not as easy as learning in the dirt. So I just kind of had to set the stage for a little bit that for people that think doing wheelies in the dirt, doing wheelies on the street, it's like night and day, in my opinion.
You know what's crazy? I couldn't wheelie on my dirt bike for the life of me. Couldn't do it. I get the street bike. And then, of course, I meet some people that know how to wheelie, and then they give me the basics. They're like, you know what? You got to just do this, 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 and this, and it'll come right up. And I was like, all right. So,
Hold on. What is this, 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 and this? Because
well, there's so many ways.
I want to. I just to jump in as well, just to say, like, you know, I was cool enough once upon a time that I had a. I know. I had a GSXR 600, and I bought this thing, and I also was like, yeah, I'm going to be fucking wheeling this down the road like I'm like the king. But I was so scared of trying to pop a wheelie and then blasting into the side of a car or throwing myself into the side of a wall that I never did it. I just drove around rode around really, really fast, but never did the wheelie thing. But my mates could all wheelie, which was just... It then meant that I was the dude that didn't wheelie on his motorbike. it's like the worst. Like, that's even worse. Like, you're better than not even have a motorbike.
That's a good point. You might as well sell that shit on eBay.
I did. I don't deserve this bike. I can't ride it.
My ego would never let me
down for it. To tell us, like, just if, let's say, Tony, I, and Shane and Albert, we all go and buy motorbikes tomorrow, and you're going to teach us how to do a wheelie. Like, what would be at least the fundamentals of pulling a successful wheelie? Go.
Well, first, you got to have balls. If you don't have balls,
check the fuck out.
So,
okay, sorry. Okay, go.
A few ways. There's quite a few ways you can wheelie if you've never done it. And the easiest way, now I was telling somebody, is, you know, you, it's all first gear. You want to stay in first gear. You're going to probably ride it out to like 3,000-4,000. You push down on the forks and then you just give it throttle and it should just start floating right up. Well, that would be like the easiest way to just to try to get the front wheel off the ground. And then it gets a little bit more complicated by, you know, you can pop clutches. You can start using that to help. But then that's going to also loop you out faster, too. So there's two ways right there. And those are the two basic ways. And then you could do it sit down. You could stand up. I tell people to stand up because you have better balance on the bike. And if you're doing a true balance sit down wheelie, you can't see anything anyways because the bike is so hot.
Exactly.
So let me just run this through again because, you know, if I buy a bike, I've got to know this. So I'm on my motorbike. I'm currently in first gear. I'm moving, or I'm static before I start my trying to do my wheelie.
Oh, you're gonna move. You're gonna be moving.
Okay, so I'm doing maybe 20 mile an hour.
Yeah, 20, 30. That works.
Okay. And then I've got to push down real hard on my forks, front forks, standing up.
Yeah.
And then I'm gonna pull in on the clutch. I'm gonna give it death and let go and see what happens.
Don't let go. Don't ever let go.
And he just fucking looped out.
Yeah, whiskey sure. Sure.
Yeah, I knew I would go wrong.
Super looped out.
Because I saw on your Instagram page is really awesome. I'd never really, well. One, like I said, you know, Tony's really introduced you to us and sort of showed us the ways of this amazing person that we've got here. And I looked at your Instagram account, which is also Impact Tech. Is that right? Like just one word?
That's right.
Yeah. And there's a lot of women on there doing amazing freestyling and wheelies and like stuff. I'm just like, holy shit, that's incredible. And they've all got your product on their bike, which makes it even more awesome. Like that must be amazing to see that sort of stuff coming through.
Absolutely. You know, it's like I drive down the freeway and a bike will pass me and it's got my part on it. Things like
that's
that.
That's cool.
That is
absolutely yeah. Make me smile.
Yeah.
And it gets even better. Everywhere I travel now, I'll see it in other states because it's, I've been doing this over 10 years now. There's a lot of it out there.
Now, is that a result of doing wheelies? Like, say Jody bought this bike and he's doing some wheelies and he fucking looped out and it's down the freeway and it's getting all busted up. And you're like, look, Jody, you need to protect your investment and put this shit on the side so your fairings don't get all bashed and you're not cracking your cases.
Nah,
is that how that
keep
evolved?
Driving.
Yeah, I'd keep driving.
No, I'm asking how we got to building the cages and stuff. So oh. My point was gone.
Oh, so I think. So, you know, learning wheelies. I actually learned really good wheelies on street bikes without crashing it, like or ever looping out, because I have good throttle control.
Okay.
And it's not until, you know, I started getting more serious with the whole stunt thing, because I'm still like, I think I'm 20 years old at this point. And the only thing that I care about is being the best fucking stunt guy in California. You know, like that's the mentality. I don't care about anything else in life right now. I just want to be the best stunt guy. So, of course, you know, you make friends with all the stunt dudes. And if you want to get serious about wheelies, you're going to have to protect the bike. And at this time, there was a local company doing it. It was the only one. And, you know, they're in San Diego. It's 100 miles away from here. But they're the only one. So it's like, all right, when I'm ready to get serious, I got to go get this stuff and put it on my bike. And then now we get more serious. Like, you could do a wheelie. But then, like, if you want a 12 o'clock, that's, like, the next level. And you definitely shouldn't try that shit unless you got either a 12 bar and some cages on your bike, because you're going to wreck trying a 12 o'clock your bike.
Now, can you tell Jody what a 12 o'clock is?
That's when you wheelie all the way to the tail.
Fuck off, of course, man.
Hits the ground.
You fucking... fucking Klauser. Holy shit.
And the bike... is at 12 o'clock, which is why we call it 12 o'clock.
Got that, Jody? Sweet. Oh, that
I'm probably more of a 3 o'clock guy, I guess.
Yeah. That gives you, I mean, when you're at 12, you don't have much room. I mean, you're up there, and anything goes backwards, your reaction time's got to be there. And yeah,
I can tell just you see what it's like. I didn't crash the bike until I tried to 12 o'clock. That's when shit started going bad. Because when you're really at 12, you really feel like the bike is already past balance point. It's going to fall backwards on you. But in reality, it's just straight up and down.
Right.
But getting there the first time, you can't prepare yourself for that. So you freak out and crash. Like, if anyone 12 the bike and doesn't crash the first time, they're going to go far in life.
Yeah. I would even say that in dirt, you know. I mean, I don't even know about these guys that are dragging their back fenders on the street or the dirt now. I don't know what o'clock that is, but that's pretty fucking serious.
I like the videos where they smash the rear brake and then they end up going over the bars.
Yeah, we call those mouse traps.
Yeah.
That's funny. I could see that.
Well, I've got a question for you. So we're talking about this, and we're talking. I've seen, you know, on your page, and I've seen guys riding street bikes, and I've been downtown San Francisco when I've seen like 8 to 10 guys riding down by Fisherman's Wharf, all standing up doing wheelies, but not going very fast. They're all balanced. They're not power wheelies. They're all just like, it's basically like riding a unicycle at that point.
Different and they're sprocket, right?
You could do it stock, but sprockets definitely help. The sprocket is there for the more torque at lower speeds, absolutely. And it's okay. There, it's also there to keep the wheelie up easier when you're in the wheelie and you're about to lose it. A little bit of gas with that much sprocket will be a lot easier to keep than a stock sprocket.
Okay, so anyway, back to the story that I was trying to explain was, after I saw that, I understood that, but then I see some of these videos on the gram of, you know, I'm not trying to be racist here, but most of them are pretty talented Afro-American kids riding dirt bikes down the street, waving one arm off the side. The motherfucking thing is just straight up, and then they jump off the foot pegs and put both feet on the seats, and they dance around, do all kinds of other crazy shit, and then they jump back down and wave the other arm, and they drag their fender. And how the fuck does that happen? Because I couldn't even do that shit in the dirt.
That's pure skill, straight up.
It's crazy looking. I mean, these guys are freaking insanely good. I don't know how you learn that shit practicing down the back alley, but they are just blowing my mind.
The crazier part is they're all on two strokes, and two strokes are way different.
Less forgiving, for sure.
I was driving through Richmond, and I saw a whole pack of them. There were probably like 30 of them, and I followed them around for like 20 minutes just watching them. There was like I said, like 20 or 30 of them, and they're all doing wheelies and weaving back and forth. And there were a couple of them that were pretty fucking good. Like Tony said, they're pulling it off, and they're pulling both hands off the bars and like crossing their arms and like riding it for a ways like that. And I was kind of like, damn.
Is there a name for that, son? What the shit they're doing?
I don't think there's a name, but it was like a movement. Ah. And it started in Baltimore. They called, the B-more kids, and that's what they're known for, is that type of ride. It's like a different style.
Yeah, totally.
Or I saw one, and the dude was fucking like on Facebook Live doing a wheelie, taking the selfie with the cops behind
Yeah. I've seen that too. And I saw a couple of videos on Instagram where, like you said, there's a bunch of dirt bikes doing that, but there's even some guys on some quads. And obviously they're not obeying the rules for one. And two, they're blowing through intersections. And three, I saw a car come on through because it was his turn to go and just take some of these motherfuckers out. And it was brutal.
It is brutal. I've been on those rides and I hate every time I'm on them because the blowing through intersections, like we're all breaking laws and then they treat the cars like it's their fucking fault. And it's right. Like, no, it's our fucking fault.
Yeah.
I don't go on many of those rides anymore because I ain't trying to get taken out by somebody either.
Yeah. I think it becomes like a, because I used to ride a lot and I think it becomes kind of like a, what would you call it? Like a mob mentality. Like,
right.
You know, there's so many of us, like what's going to happen, you know?
Like I've seen
and then,
it. I've
and
seen
then the something ride. Does happen. And it may not even, you know, it's just, you know, when there's, I think a lot of drivers just freak out when there's, you know, all of a sudden there's 50 people around them, you know, weaving in and out and, you know, revving their shit. And I think some people just freak out and then, you know, something does happen. And then everyone's, you know, real quick to blame the people in the car.
Right. There was like an instance in New York a few years ago where like they surrounded somebody and he freaked out. So he gassed and he ran a couple people over. Well, they followed him down, dragged him out of his car and beat his ass like almost to death. And it,
oh, yeah. I think I saw that. Yeah.
Yeah. Pretty crazy.
I think I saw some video of a bunch of guys doing some stand up wheelies across the Golden Gate there a couple years back, too. I'm not sure. Have you ever heard of that?
They do it every year.
Oh, I wasn't. Yeah. Hallucinating then.
It's a ride that they put on and it's every year. I won't say what it is and throw them all under the bus, but
it have you happens done it?
Every year. I have done it.
Sweet.
Cool. So going back then, so there was this company in San Diego. You basically thought I can make stuff better than this stuff.
No, this is what happened. I bought their stuff, I put it on my bike. The first time I crashed it, their stuff's folded like paper. And I was like, that's not right. And they're like, oh, no, that's normal. We want it to fold so, you know, your frame doesn't fold. I'm like, that's kind of a good way to look at it. But I need this shit to last longer than one crash. So I go back down and I give them a couple ideas. And they just tell me to piss off because, you know, nobody likes somebody telling you how to run your company, right? Little did they know, I was going to start my own company, blow them out of the water 10 years later.
you sound so sinister. You've kind of gone into this like little hole and gone, little did they know that I was going to start my own company. And first generation Vietnamese, fuck you.
Right? So after about 3 trips to San Diego, I was like, all right. I got to do something about this. There's got to be a way we can make this better. And luckily for me, being where I'm from, there's a lot of off-road fabrication going on where I'm at. So by nature, I know a lot of fabricators that can give me the knowledge of, you know, material, what's strongest, what's going to work, and then how to make stuff. Because all these dudes are, you know, putting long travel kits on their trucks, roll cages, that kind of thing. And I knew these people, which is how I was able to start doing what I do. Because I asked a friend of mine, I was like, teach me how to weld and fabricate, man. And he showed me one time. The rest is history.
Nice.
Very cool. Say, Hank's here, and he's got a quick question for you, if you don't mind him asking.
Hey folks, it's Hillbilly Hank, and I've got a question for our guest tonight, son. Hey son, you ever just getting sick and tired of people in your presence yelling out, "Damn, son!"
I did not even understand that.
I think that was the worst internet joke we've had ever. Holy shit!
He said something.
You can't say "damn, son." You are fucking out of control. What the hell is going on?
No, really, I know his son. I've known him, and there's nothing I can't ask him. But I mean, does that get old when people just say "damn, son"?
Hell no.
So son, when you you'd got, you know, you knew all these fabricators, and you know that's great. But how did you turn that into the business that you have now? Like, how did you get to the point where you are able to market a product?
How'd you even learn how to weld, son?
Damn! Well,
I saw my friend do it, and replicated what he did.
Did you go to school, or did somebody just show you how to start welding?
Yeah, my friend showed me how to weld. Showed me for like 15 minutes, and then I went home, bought the same welder, started practicing, and...
Was that wire welding? MIG?
Yep, it's MIG.
Right on.
So... Now, the goal actually was to never start a business. Like, that was not my intentions whatsoever. The only thing I wanted was a better part for myself so I can go fucking be a stunt rider.
Right.
And so I make the first cage for my bike in my garage, you know, like, and then I put it on my bike, you know, and then I go out to the stunt spot where everyone is and we're all riding. And like, people are like, huh. I haven't seen that before. Like, did you make that? And I was like, I sure did. They're like, that's cool. And then I actually would crash my own shit at the stunt spot. And everyone was like, wow, look, it works. And you know, that the people started coming up to me, asking me to make them one. And then one turned into two, and then two turned into four. And then that was how I was able to market the product. Cause I knew everybody that stunt rides in California. And at the time, there was not a good product. So that's how it all got going. If it wasn't okay, for me, so you know, actually riding, you know, like there's nowhere I would have been able to market. I did it because I was in the mix, you know?
Yeah, you didn't need to make commercials or do anything like that. You just went out in front of people and showed them what you had, then laid it down and showed them that it survived.
Exactly. And at the time, nothing like that existed.
Yeah, that to me is the key part of this, that you went, there is no product out there currently and I can see a market for it, so therefore I'm gonna be the badass motherfucker that's gonna jump into that and I'm gonna own it. And that's what you're doing right now.
Yeah, so then you went from like, okay, I'm welding this shit. You were still at home, right, in your mom's garage?
That's right.
And so you're welding this shit and you're making the stuff that you need to make, but then what's the next step? When did you decide that I need to get a machine because I can weld this stuff, but I need a machine tool?
That's a lot of years down the road.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah. Well, first of all, you know, I'm doing this in my garage. I was in the garage for 6 years and it was paying my bills. You know, I was my own boss, but like, I really didn't know if this would even work. I didn't know if there was a future in it. I didn't know the demand would still be there. These are all, and then I didn't even know, I didn't have the balls to just go get a shop because it's more overhead and I was scared of that too.
Right.
So, but this was still paying for your life to live. Like you didn't have another job in like, as a, no, like a subsidiary. You were, this was
right.
I'm balls deep. I'm in. So this is, I'm going to just make the whole thing work.
Yeah, and by this time, you know, stores were selling marijuana, so that job was definitely out of
here. Yeah, that was dead.
No more free dead. Chinese food.
Nope. No more Chinese food.
You can go to the store with your card and get better shit for half the price. And
exactly.
On another thing that, you know, got this going was, this was in 2008, you know, when all the shit hit the fan with the economy and stuff.
Right.
And that's when I got laid off at my other job, which was assembling trophies for soccer moms. And, you know, I was doing that just to get a paycheck on the table because I was still also selling weed on the side. But then in 2008, boss just like, you know what? Times are tough. So
were you selling weed to soccer moms?
No, but that would be cool. Oh, wow.
Whoa. What?
I did.
And also, like,
that's,
how
a,
hot,
that,
How hot were the soccer moms? Oh,
this is a whole nother episode.
Oh, okay, sorry. Okay, 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 sorry. Okay, 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 okay.
I'll tell you what. I was selling weed to a lady that worked at a local steel yard. I actually banged her.
Yeah.
I'm not going to say it because it could get to her.
Yeah, first thing is Albert doesn't want to hear the story. Albert just wants to know, what's her name?
Yeah, because this is, in theory, Machinist Tinder Hotline. Okay, sorry. Okay, so there was. We'll skip the part that I mentioned, and let's carry on with the story.
Thanks a lot, Jody. You derailed us there, buddy.
Sorry. yeah, so that's you, son. Sorry.
Where was I going?
we got off track,
soccer mom, and the trophy job is no longer.
Trophy job is gone.
That forced me to go. Okay, well, I guess I'll just do this now, you know. And then it gave me more time to focus on that. And then 6 years down the road, I guess I have to give my ex-wife some credit for this. Ex-wife now, but when I met her, she was a registered nurse. All successful and shit, and then my piece of shit ass was welding in my garage, and that was when I was like, I'm gonna get a shop, and then that turns into where we have all the machines today.
How'd you meet your ex-wife? What were you doing, wheelies?
No, we were raving in Las Vegas.
Ooh, that's even cooler.
Yeah, it was a good time.
So you went from just like welding in your garage to
it's a garage.
You were welding in your garage, and then you had a machine shop.
Why'd you need a machine? Tell us why you need a machine.
Yeah.
Hold on. So I got out of my garage. I got my first shop.
Garage.
It's 2,000 square feet. It's bigger than my garage, so it worked out. I was there for about 8 months, and that was when I knew about CNC machining. And I knew that, you know, these are the tools that you need if you want to make anything you want. I knew that. But I had actually never seen one until I was probably, I think I was 27 or 28. I didn't see my first machine until I was 28. And that came from a friend that stopped by my first shop. And he was like, hey, man, you need anything machine? And I was like, fuck, yes, I do. He's like, come over to my shop. I got a CNC machine. And that was the start of machining for me. Like, I go to this dude's shop. I see a fucking tool change and I literally shit my pants and was just mesmerized. I was like, holy shit, this thing just fucking tool changed. I need that in my life.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Well, what were you actually machining? What was it that you wanted machined?
Well, so in our industry, there was a need for clutch levers. That's why I now make clutch levers. But there's only one. The original clutch lever that everybody wanted was a casted piece of shit from China that just sucked. But this had the best clutch pull, so everyone used it. And then one guy got brave and then started doing it out of billet. And then he was the only guy doing this, which is why I was like, fuck that guy. I'm going to start doing this too. And then, so I told my friend with the machine, I was like, we're going to make something. We're going to make this clutch lever because A, it's pretty fucking universal. And B, there's only one guy doing it right now. So I'm going to put him in his place.
Yeah.
I just imagine while you're in my head, I've got this vision as why you're just like saying this. You're doing like punches in the air, and then
I see him like in a big city in a Chinese food restaurant fighting Steven Seagal and kicking his ass and pulling
Fuck
his ponytail.
Yeah.
You know, I see all this shit happening, but it's just way cool. You're just describing it really well. It's a great buildup. So when you're talking about clutch levers, now these aren't breakaways. I mean, like if you fall down, it doesn't have a detent and fold in or anything, does it?
But the other clutch still there? Like it's like a double?
What's the other clutch?
No. Like, is the lever, does it sit, like, is it's it a not total a, replacement?
Hold on. It's not a fucking lever. It's a lever.
Hey, the lever, like, is it?
Oh, my God.
Does it sit on the other one, or is it, like, you have to full replace it?
It's a full replacement.
Right. Okay. Okay. Gotcha. So you moved out of your garage and you've made levers. Awesome.
This lever is like the catalyst.
Yeah, he almost said lever.
To everything, straight up.
So it is the, like, this other guy that you put in play in his place. Did he start to up his game, and then you had a clutch lever war? Is that sort of what happened?
Yeah.
Fuck yeah. Awesome. Yeah.
But I definitely won the war because.
Yeah. Yes, you did. That's why you're on MPH.
He's still sitting there with his one VF2 pumping out his levers. And I got way more than that. So I'm winning.
I just like the business story from that standpoint, because you hear a lot of, like, you know, business types and, you know, MBAs and stuff. And they're always talking about, you know, going to business with a purpose and, you know, you're going to solve people's problems. And I just like, you know, kind of your look at it is fuck those guys. I'm going to make something even better.
It's really that simple.
Yeah.
But sometimes making it better requires a lot of work. And that's when it determines, like, who's willing to do that.
Yeah. Definitely.
Because that's where the quality of the stunt cages comes in. Nobody was willing to put as much work into it as I did to make it as good as it actually is. And then after 10 years, that's all people know, is that is a good product because it works. And then after 10 years, everybody knows it works. That's just the truth.
So have you now seen, while you're driving down the freeway, some other people that are now, you know, are you looking over your shoulder now? Like, have you made a product now that there are these young kids coming up and going, fuck that guy, I'm going to make this better again? Is like that? If that's the case, that must also feel pretty good.
Yeah.
I mean, are there other people now trying to copy what you're doing?
Everybody has copied what I try to do in the industry, because I have literally set the standards for everything done in our industry. The designs that I made have all been copied.
Wow.
That's all people do is copy. But the thing they can't copy is how I run my business, which is why none of them are even this close.
Yeah, right.
You know, you would think that somebody that is at your point and as successful as you are would have a website by now.
I'm working on that, guys. I know some people have asked you to ask me that question. Tell them it's on the way. It's under construction.
Nice.
We might see it before 2022.
Is it true in your free time that you like to make memes about, do I have a website?
Absolutely.
Stop the podcast. Guess what? The MTH Photo a Day Challenge is back. In February, we're going to be posting the list. In fact, we'll post the list just before February. And the idea is that we want to try and get more people involved, like your friends and family. So we're going to create a list that's going to be user-friendly for everybody involved. So once you see the list, repost it, get your friends involved, and let's get all amongst it. Okay, now back to Sun. Let's get on with the podcast. Let's talk about your workshop, like where you're at right now. You've started to own the industry, you built yourself up, and you've become a major player in your sector of you know what you're aiming for. You've experienced somebody that's done a tool change, and you've like jizzed in the coolant, and you're now ready to explore the machine inside of where you wanted to get to. Like, what was that? Where, you know, when did that point come? When was that? When did you buy your first machine? How did you get to it? Because there'd be so many people listening to this now that are they think or maybe want to be at that stage, and that can be quite a scary thing. So, like, you know, talk us through it.
Well, my first machine, well, I brought the guy in that, you know, showed me the tool change. It got to a point where it was like, let's work together, you know, and he had his Matsura MC600 that I currently own right now. He had that in his shop, and then I had a great idea. I was like, let's combine forces, you know, my shop, your machine shop, and then we'll be, you know, a powerhouse, because I don't have a machine shop, and that's what I need.
Right.
So that's when I decide to get out of my shop. We get him out of his shop, and we move into the huge ass shop that I'm in now. So the plan was to get in here, you know, he does the machining, I do all the welding and fabricating, and we'll go from there. But that quickly unraveled 3 months into this marriage. You know, we get here, I'm in this huge ass building, I got his machine in here, and then he advised me to buy a matching Matsura, which ended up being the biggest piece of shit on the planet. I mean, fuck. Now that we all know what we're talking about and we're a machinist, like, you don't advise somebody to buy a machine on the other side of the United States without even looking at it, especially a 1983 MC600 with a fucking pallet changer that doesn't even work, right?
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. Freight alone.
Now that I know that, I'm like, dude, like, who the fuck would even tell somebody to do that? And this was like the guy I was trying to partner with.
Right.
Anyway, so his machine's in here. I have a second non-working junk Matsuri in here. And he's got the levers going. I got all my stuff going. And then it turns out the guy don't know anything. And he's been lying to me this whole time. He just runs the machine. He can't program. He can't draw anything in CAD. He had somebody else do all that stuff and then just loaded into the machine and then just ran the all he knew how to do. And here I am in a big ass shop. Here I am in this big ass shop with this dude. And I'm like, holy shit, I'm fucked.
He fucking lied to you.
This sounds so familiar to, not to talk about someone else, but when Ken was on, he had a pretty similar story. And
yeah.
You know,
but if it wasn't for all this, I wouldn't be where I am today. Absolutely.
True.
Yeah.
True, true.
Yeah. Yeah, true.
So sorry, there's always always those some sketchy partners.
And how this worked is because, you know, like, I was making my own product too that was actually selling. So that is what kept the machining going, because the lever I was making was selling. It was selling really good because I was the second guy to come out on the market with it. And I'll tell you what, one of my greatest accomplishments is clearing an alarm at 1989 MC600.
That would be an accomplishment for any person, to be fair.
So if your air cuts out and your tool arm gets stuck, you literally got to go change parameters in that fucking thing to reset it.
Oh, wow. How did you get yourself to your first Haas?
That's pretty much what was like the driving factor. Like, so many things were going wrong with this Matsura. I was like, fuck this. Like, I would over jog the damn limit switch and not know how to get it back. Like, something that stupid. And the guy that ran it, that knew all this shit, we don't talk anymore because I kicked his ass out.
Okay.
I bought him out. So we made a deal. I bought his machine, got him out of there. And then, you know, it's old, it's working, but only when it wants to. And that's when I was like, and then I was trying to have a relationship with this guy because he really knew this machine inside and out, and I didn't. And I was still trying to run it. So it got to the point when, you know, he decided to be strong arm me and stop answering my phone calls to help. And I was like, well, guess who's not going to do that? Probably Haas. If I buy a machine from them, they'll probably answer all my questions.
True.
So I went and bought a machine. That's when I got a Haas. Also, because my neighbor down the street, he owned a shitload of Haases. So he, of course, sends his Haas rep over. And then they sucked me into buying a machine. And that's how that went down.
Yeah, you know, that's key, though, to have people that are neighbors that you can share information with and say, hey, you know, I'm stuck here. Have you seen this? And I'm like, oh, hell yeah, simple.
Yeah, another reason I chose Haas, because my life, longtime friend who is a machinist, you know, I talked to him, and he works in a job shop, and he'd been doing it for probably 10 years before I was at this point ready to get my own machine. So I go to him, and I'm like, what should I get? You know, the internet says Haas sucks. Like, what's your take on it? And he's like, so it's like, he swore by Haas. He was like, they're great machines. You know, like, they're the best bang for your buck, easy to use. Like, it depends on what you're going to do with it. And I'm like, I'm just going to fucking tinker around and make aluminum parts. Like, he's like, well, then that sounds like a great case to buy Haas. So that's what pushed me to it. Because, yeah, all I'm doing is aluminum. I'm not doing anything crazy. It's not like, and I don't even need to hold tight tolerances either, because I'm making my own fucking parts. I don't even care if they're like 2 inches off, you know.
2 inches?
Wow. 2 inches.
Right. You got Hillbilly Hank over there working for you now, I think.
That's a lot in Asia.
Yeah.
Well, that's the funniest thing. There Hold you on. Go. Albert, that's number one funny thing in 2020 right there. Albert, yeah. That was kick ass.
That was awesome.
I've been saving that one.
Sweet.
Okay, so you've got a house full of mills. You're making levers, levers, whatever the fuck they are. And you decide, you know, you want to make some lathe parts. What do you do?
I call Tony first.
What?
Tony has a lathe.
And then what happened?
Then I cut Tony out.
Fuck yeah, you did. Exactly right.
Want to hear all about that.
Yeah, yeah. Let's go right down. Let's break it down into almost day by day. Let's do that.
Oh, that's way too long. Because it was a long relationship there.
Do you have a recording of the phone call where you broke the news to him?
Yeah. Did you have the same sort of, like, you know, like, can-do sort of attitude where you went, hey, Tony, I bought a fucking lathe, so fuck you?
Pretty much.
Damn, son!
Okay, wait, let's hear Tony's side of the story.
And Tony was hooking me up, too. It was, like, dirt cheap, you know? He just loved to be a part of this.
I knew I was fucking too cheap. God damn it, story of my life.
But I'm a businessman, and, you know, at the end of the day, I'm always looking to save myself money.
It's just aluminum. You put Hillbilly Hank in front of it. You give him a team.
He's
good for the weekend.
I didn't get the lathe to say fuck Tony. There was like 90% of the other shit that I do on it now that I wasn't going to ask Tony to do.
Yeah. Now, in all honesty, he hit me up. And here's how he started our conversation. I've been stalking you for a long time, and now it's time. I'm all, okay, what do you want? And he's like, can you make one of these? I'm all, fuck yeah, I can make one of those. And he's all, okay, sweet, make me some. And I made some. He's all, I want to change this. I said, okay, change that. And I want to change that. Okay, I'll change this. And the next time, I want to change that. And anyway, we changed a bunch of shit, and I made him some runs. And he actually, in all fair honesty, gave me plenty of warning and said, I'm looking at one of these. You got a ways to go, but eventually I'm going to be making these. And then he bought his Haas lathe. But my question to you is, out of all the names that you could have came up with, why did you name your lathe Carlos?
Because that was the last employee I fired. His name was Carlos.
Ah! Perfect!
And, you know, it does a lot of the things that the people that always got fired did. So we named it Carlos after the last guy.
That's okay, isn't it?
Did it show up late?
Carlos works all night. I've seen him. He says goodbye to Carlos. He has a green light and everything's good. Then he comes in the morning and he's all like, you had one job, Carlos. And sometimes shit goes wrong. Sometimes shit doesn't.
Tell you what, man. Everybody needs a lathe and a bar feeder.
Exactly.
I agree with that.
And the thing literally eliminated 5 employees from my shop.
Whoa.
Man, yeah, that's a lot.
The things I have it doing, I used to need these 5 people to do. And one of the main ones is I was able to get rid of a welder entirely because we're machining what used to be welded out of solid stock.
Yeah, that's sweet.
Yeah, that's very cool. Yeah.
And I wouldn't even be doing any of this if it wasn't for my friend with 10 years of machining knowledge going, look, we can do it this way. And I'm like, look, well, if I buy this lathe, can we do it? And he's like, yeah. So I buy the lathe and then he gets it to rock and roll. And that's how we're doing this. You know, like, I mean, right. I could do it now, but to, you know, to get moving this fast, you know, you got to have help. And I definitely had help.
You know, a very handsome man once said,
this is coming.
Sometimes it's not what you know, but it's who you know.
It really is. And he was like, you know, we can machine those pieces out of solid. And I'm like, it's an inch and a half solid. Like, that's going to take forever to mill out. Except for now we have one giant drill just hogging it all out and it takes 3 minutes and stuff.
Yeah. You know, in our field, and I'll say this time again, man, communication's key. And it's like all of us, the four of us that started this group and then inviting people on. I mean, you know, knowledge is wealth, and sharing stuff and meeting people that want to help you and your exchange for things that you can help them back with. I mean, it's a give, and it really is. I mean, there's people, you know, we've all been in them spots where you struggle and you teach yourself and you learn yourself. But man, when you got somebody that say, no, do it like this and I'll show you how. I mean, when you meet them people that are willing to share, it's really awesome. And that doesn't happen every day. But when it does, you need to cherish it and give back.
I was going to say the giving back part is key, actually, because, you know, the worst thing you could do is go, oh, yeah, that's great. I'll take all this information and now I'm just going to shit on you.
Yeah, like, see you.
You know, as long as you're not that kind of guy, like, people will always respect you, eh?
Well, this is how it went down. You know, he's been my long life friend. So I was like, I couldn't have done this without him. I couldn't have got all these machines or ran them the way I do now if it wasn't for him. So my deal to him was like, my machine shop is your machine shop, man. Like, whatever job you want to pull in and do, feel free and do it. Like, that's how it works.
That's really cool.
Do you want to name him? Can you name who it is?
His name is Mike. Was a machinist for a company called CST for right around a decade. And then he moved himself to SpaceX for a couple years. And that was all great and grand. But the whole drive to Hawthorne is like 2 hours from here. And so that was wearing on him. So I got him out of SpaceX to come help me. And he's been able to use my machine shop to do all his side jobs too.
Nice.
Now, that wasn't the license plate picture that you took today, was it?
That was another guy from SpaceX coming to give us more jobs.
At nice. Your motorcycle manufacturing parts place.
That's right. There's a lot of things that goes on in here, not even motorcycle related.
So is it safe to say that you are now venturing into rocket parts?
Well, not official parts that fly, because you need a lot of certs to do that, but we'll get there.
Well, that's pretty fucking cool.
It is. And that's another one of those things. It's who you know.
So, okay, off topic, I got a question for you.
Oh, hang on. Before you do that.
Okay.
So, it's not that you're going to start making crash cages for rockets.
Hey, there might be some money
on whose rocket they are, I guess.
Because I guarantee there definitely won't be a market for that. But you could, you know, you could own that shit.
I don't know. Elon, a couple of his rockets crashed, didn't they?
They just tested their escape pod and it worked flawlessly. So that was cool.
Yeah, but that doesn't mean that you can use a rocket again, surely.
No, they blew the booster up.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, it's for the crew capsule, so.
Okay. Sorry, Tony. Go.
Okay, so I've got a two-part question. First part is, have you ever been on the toilet taking a poo while one of your machines has crashed?
No, I have not.
And fuck, you haven't even lived.
The funny thing is, the only person that has crashed a machine in here is absolutely me. And it was my fucking brand new Haas. The first day it dropped in the shop, I decided I would like try to play around with it and load a program and run it. Oh my God. I ran that spindle at 100% rapid straight down And no. it sounded like a fucking car crashed in here. It really did. Oh, everyone stopped.
Oh my god.
Everyone ran over. They're like, "What'd you do?" And I was like, "I don't even know." But
yeah, it gets pretty loud.
Luckily for me, it was a face mill and it went straight into aluminum. So
there's no luck about a face mill going into aluminum.
No,
if it was a quarter-inch drill, that would have been luck.
The shutoff saved it, you know, the override. And then
when
applications came back the next day to like fuck with the mill, they're like, "Did you do that?" And I was like, "Yes, I did. Can you check it for me?" And nothing happened. Thank God. Everything was still straight.
Okay. And my second question was, have you ever been in a helicopter in New York with a porn star at the same time?
Oh,
let's sure hear have. This.
Let's listen to this.
Let's hear this whole story name. From the beginning.
I just hang on. Okay. I've got my pants off. Let's go.
Jody had to light a cigarette.
I've eaten my sausage. I've got a belly full of beer and my pants are down.
All right. Well, if you guys watch nearly as much porn as I do, you're going to recognize faces in public. So,
I could probably recognize an elbow.
I couldn't believe, like, it's weird to see them in person because you definitely know who they are. You know what they look like, but you know, like, they're a lot smaller in real life than they look in the videos. That's why, like, dicks look so big because their hands are really small.
Whoa. Are we talking about Riley Reed right now?
No. This one I
meant. Am I the only one wondering why you're looking at the dicks? Or
I'm looking at my hands.
Okay, come on. Let's let him finish the story, Jody. Put your hands away.
So fucking funny.
Carry on, son.
So, well, I love helicopters. I'm eventually going to learn how to fly and own one day. So wherever I go...
Instant visual.
He's talking instant visual. All of a sudden, Jody sees Danny D doing a helicopter.
Oh, dearie me. Okay, I've got to calm down. Hold on.
Yeah, please.
Right, okay.
It's all you, son.
All right. So, I like to take the helicopter tours wherever I am. And so, I'm in New York just vacationing, and we're in the helicopter lobby waiting. And I turn, and, like, I see this woman with humongous tits, and I was like, that has to be Alexis Fox because she's like one of my favorite MILFs, you know, probably everybody's favorite MILF. She is like the MILF of MILF porn. Like, it's her. If you think MILF, you're thinking Alexis Fox. So
I'm
with my wife at this point and I'm like, I know who that is. She's like, it's not her. I was like, watch. So I creep on her Instagram. Guess where the fuck she is? She's in New York. I was like, that's fucking her. So I go to the bathroom. I come back. My wife and her are like best fucking friends because she broke the ice and was like, my husband knows all about you. Blah, 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 blah. Either way, she was ecstatic. She's like, oh, I love meeting fans. Blah, 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 blah. We go on our helicopter ride. Then we get off of it. And then she's like, what are you guys doing? Like,
hold on. You invited her on the helicopter ride?
No, we were on the same one. Like, she was just happened to want to go helicopter rides the same day we were.
That was meant to be. This was
wow. And then she just happened to be in our group also.
I feel like there is already a porn story in unfolding.
Wow, chica, wow, wow,
yeah,
wow.
That's how it starts.
Wow, how you do?
You had whatever comes next. You had to do. This was your civic duty to do this because this would never, ever in a million years happen. So you had to do it. Let's hear it.
Yeah, exactly. This is like when Albert had a threesome that time. It's the same.
Yeah, no, but this is way better. Way better. Like, let's let the man finish. Like, I am frothing here to hear the rest.
Hold on. Oh, what? You're frothing.
Albert's going to explode. He's going to explode. Be quiet, Jody.
Okay, sorry. Because Albert's frothing. I'm already concerned about that. Let's go.
Well, it's definitely not going to end like that. But we did. We went and had lunch with her. We had coffee. Basically, like, got the rundown of her life. Her and my wife swapped numbers. They were talking to each other all the time and like friends. Like when she would like be waiting for the next scene to start, you know, she would have to sit there and she would be bored, and then she would just text my wife.
She didn't know what else.
What?
That's unreal.
I feel like I really should have pulled my pants off. This is too good.
And then she does like a comedy show in LA that we've been invited to a couple of times, and it's been pretty fun. You know, wow. we go to the show. She smokes hella weed herself. She has like a weed business on the side, and like it's like a comedy show. And then she brings her other porn star friends in to do stand-up comedy.
God.
It's a good time.
I feel like there's more to this story. There's more to this story, surely.
I'm pretty sure.
Surely there's a, you know, she didn't just smoke weed, you know.
She did it, but I never got. I know. If anything was, if we were going to have anyone join this relationship, it would have been her, but it didn't.
Or me.
Condolences.
Yeah, I feel like, I don't know, I feel deflated right now. Like this could have been the best podcast we've ever done, and we should have just quit.
I'm telling you, episodes. Though, my run-in with the other porn star was a lot better than this
one. Oh! Damn,
we're not doing that. The other Tony, did you tell him about the other one I ran into?
Tony,
no, I did not.
Oh, Tony's pulling his pants up. He's been pulling his blonk.
he's pulling his pud, is what he's doing.
I didn't want to give it away, man. It's all you, bro. You go.
So I'm at a rave in Texas, having a great time, and we're in the VIP section. And I turn the corner, and there she is. Madison Ivy, all 4'10" of her, and her giant tits staring at me. And
he takes a picture and he sends it to me. He's all, "Hey Tony, Google Madison Ivy." I'm all, "I don't fucking need to Google Madison Ivy. I know who that is."
Dude. If anyone knows his porn people, it's Tony.
Well, she's been, how old is she, son? She's been in it for a while, I think.
I don't know. She don't look older than 25.
What?
All right. No, yeah, she's old. 30. She has to be older than that.
Yeah, she was born in 89. So I'm on her Instagram right now.
What are your Instagram? Are he's on her fucking Instagram.
She must be 20. She must be 30 something, surely.
He just said 89.
Oh, okay. Yeah, 89. 29, then. 31, then. Yeah. Okay, so I
can't. That's pretty complicated math. I can't do that.
Well, if you guys are familiar with raves, you know, people go to these places to do drugs, right? Okay. Well, she was definitely on some ecstasy. So was I. So I actually go and introduce myself, and she loved it. She was like, I know you. I know who you are. I love your content. It's amazing. And she was like, "Oh my god, thank you so much for telling me this. I have videos of myself dancing and kissing her. It was amazing." Wow. And like her bouncers tried to come up, and like she was like, "No, this guy's cool." And that was the closest I probably could have got to going home with a porn star, except for my fucking stupid wife cock blocked me.
Damn.
That's ex-wife, right?
Yes, now ex-wife. I'm telling you, I was in like Flynn. I got videos to prove it.
I mean, it must have been nice though. It must have been nice watching all those videos of her sucking people off and then you kissing her. Like that must have.
I don't look at it that way. You look at it that way. I look at it in a whole different light. There are no dicks on that mouth right now about to find them.
No, you know what I'm totally. Saying? Yeah. There's no dick in that mouth.
That's what they make mouthwash for, Jody.
Is that why they make mouthwash, Tony? They only,
you know,
they
It's not like your wife was the first one you fucked. Come on.
Exactly, Jody.
I know. You're totally true. That is true. Yeah. In fact, okay, that's absolutely 100% true.
All right.
I don't
give
a fuck how many dicks you just sucked. I wanted mine to be next.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yep.
That's yeah, I can hear level that shit right there. All right. So I went from that question to my next question. Any plans for some new machines?
Yeah, let's talk about machinery.
Yeah,
you want to buy Carlos part two?
I do need a Carlos part two because I like
you
that
need
back
fucking you need twin spindles, twin turret.
Yeah, I do actually. That would be awesome. But so, you know, I think the next machine on the horizon would probably be a screw machine. That's what I'm looking at.
Yeah, I know somebody with two of them.
So that's on the horizon. I'm also looking at maybe a 5-axis too, so I can do some cooler stuff.
Whoa, that's way cool. Who, now, do you have a friend that knows how to do that shit?
I don't, but I'm going to figure that shit out.
Me neither, but Boomer's pretty cool at it.
Oh, yeah.
And he's pretty cheap, too. He works for Mickey's and
he's
free
cheap
porn. Yeah, porn. And Mickey's.
Mickey's and pizza.
And pills.
And pizza. He loves his pepperoni pizza.
Prescription and pills. Yeah.
Pills before bills, baby.
Yeah.
Awesome.
Holy shit. We definitely reached a turning point somewhere. And maybe at the helicopter ride, I think.
That was pretty cool, though, huh?
That was fucking cool.
Now, you took a helicopter ride at IMTS somehow. You just fucking decided you wanted to go for a ride over Chicago 2 years ago, right?
Yeah, that was 2 years ago already. Holy shit.
Well, he said every time he goes somewhere, he gets a helicopter ride.
Exactly. I'm going next time, or Hank is.
You should come to New Zealand. That's pretty good scenery here.
I'll fly there myself when I get my own.
You might be a bit far for a helicopter.
Yeah, I think I reckon you'd be struggling.
No, that's what makes it fun, because, you know, you just hopscotch, and you make your way there. It takes forever, but you're going to see a lot of stuff you normally wouldn't see.
You're going to hopscotch into the ocean. That's where you're going to hopscotch to.
Bring some extra gas.
Yeah. That's right. You could hopscotch
straight into the sea.
Maybe
I'll fly across the ocean, rent a helicopter, and then get the hell up.
There you go.
That's smart thinking right there.
I was going to say, there'd have to be probably about 30 or 40 aircraft carriers on the way there for you to make it.
That's a lot of hopscotching. Okay, so this is one of the questions that we always ask all the guests that we have on.
Oh.
Who are some of your favorite people that you follow and learn shit from on the gram?
Favorite and learn shit from?
Yeah.
Ooh, let me think about this.
The top five.
I'll tell you a lot that interests me is that Rad Knives guy. You know, I couldn't believe a knife would sell for $20,000. And then I did some research. Then I saw the craft that he does. This fucking guy, it would be like if you went out and dug the fucking aluminum ore yourself, melted it down, then started making your part. That's what this guy does. Oh, and you made your CNC machine that you also make this part on. Like, that's this guy.
Isn't that right, Tony?
Oh, Tony. Yeah. He's really into that. Yeah.
Easy.
This guy's fucking nuts. Like,
Tony, have you heard about this guy before?
Have you ever heard about this guy?
I might have stumbled across one of those episodes on the line, but, you know, I've never really dove too deep into it. No.
Oh, maybe we. Yeah. Okay. Carry on. Yep. Is that number one or number five?
I think that's number one. Interest goes and like learning, because I did learn a lot about what he was doing. Like this colorful material isn't just, you know, some airbrushed metal. It's like thousands of different layers of titanium that have been forged together. And then when you heat it up, every different alloy turns into a different color. And then you got this wild ass material that's really expensive.
That's true. A lot of work goes into that.
Yeah,
a lot of work, and that's why. And then, you know, if you're a rich guy, you're gonna want to spend your money on something nobody else has, and that would be this stuff. Like, look at my $20,000 pocket knife.
Yeah. I'm just going to open this letter.
You say that with such, I don't know what. What the? Okay, number two.
Number two.
He's probably looking for his phone.
Probably, no, not even it's off the top of my head. It's going to be, I think, 1186 Manufacturing.
Yeah.
It's that guy, Devin. You guys have to know about.
He's got some great machinery.
Yeah, I know Devin.
Like, I want to know his story. Like, this dude has, like, gazillions of dollars of DMG Mores in his shop.
No.
Maybe Albert wants to say something about that.
No, he doesn't. It's not his shop.
I didn't think so, because his car didn't match his stuff.
No, it's not his shop. He used to work for this company not too far from me called Direct Aero Systems. They're like aerospace manufacturer, and it's kind of like a startup company. And I know his boss is a pretty nice guy, but he ended up leaving there, and now he works for Autodesk.
Oh wow.
Yeah, okay. It did look like, from like the outsider looking in, I feel like it kind of looked like it was like his shop or whatever.
Yeah, but the business knew it wasn't.
He's like a super smart guy, like super smart programmer. Definitely a good guy to have working at a place like Autodesk.
Yeah, cool.
Cool.
Okay, number three.
Number three. I'm gonna have to say maybe that Tony Clouser guy.
Who's that?
So he just works there. The real brains behind the operation is this gentleman named Hank.
No. The real brains behind the whole operation is a beautiful lady called Katie, and she is what makes the magic happen in that shop.
Oh, I've sent Katie shopping a couple of times.
Yes, he has. She misses those days, by the way.
She's the one that hands Tony and Hank a list and then locks them in there. And it's like a Saw movie. They're just in there together, no way out.
Yeah, constantly talking back and forth, arguing. No, you saw your leg off, damn it.
Yeah, then one of them finds a tape recorder, and it's just Katie. Get the fuck back to work.
Exactly.
Number four.
Wait, we're on three. What way are you fucking counting?
We gotta skip you. Jesus Christ, man.
Are these interesting grams have to be machinist related?
No. Whatever it is,
we know you're going to porn stars next anyway.
Yeah, exactly.
No, those are like a given, so we don't even need to name those.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, they're just there. They're like, you don't follow, but they're on your search list all the time.
Right. Right.
Number four.
You know, a good one I follow is Red Bull. Red Bull does a lot of cool shit.
I do too. They do some badass shit.
They do so much cool shit that make you go, what the fuck?
Yeah, why they have planes, bike riders, all kind of, everything is crazy that's on Red Bull for sure.
They have motorcycles riding waves. Think about that for a second.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Motorcycles riding waves.
Yeah, that's pretty cool. That's not pretty cool. That's amazingly cool.
Yeah.
Hey, Tony, didn't you went to a thing with Yeti Man, didn't you? Didn't he make a trophy for a Red Bull event?
Yeah, he is definitely connected to Red Bull, and we actually went to a thing that's close to me up here in Northern California, where there was, okay, so you take about like 10 helicopters and they're all dangling these pylons down from them. And then you take about 6 to 7 to 8 guys up in a bigger helicopter up above all these helicopters, and they jump out in bat suits and they fly around these helicopters with blades rotating, swarming around these pylons. And then they go to the finish line, and it's a fucking race. And they bump each other in their bat suits and try to stay out of the blades. And yeah, so no, he made the trophy and he made the weights that held the pylons down that dangled from the helicopters. It was insane.
Wow, that's cool. Cool. Sorry. And number five.
Number five. It's going to be, the name is Savage Sack.
Wow. It can only be resuscitated through his sack.
Savage Sack. And I'll send this to Tony, and he can see it later, but this guy is basically living my dream life in 10 years. He owns his own helicopter, and he squirrel suits out of it and does the whole squirrel suit, wingsuit thing, skydiving thing, base jumping thing, while owning your own fucking helicopter and traveling the world too. So it's pretty, and he's a GoPro. He's sponsored by GoPro, so he's always got amazing footage of his helicopters and the adventures that he goes on.
He must spend a lot on helicopters if he keeps jumping out of them.
Well, his friend takes over the controls.
Oh, gotcha.
You know, he's like flying through canyons and shit with his squirrel suit. It's pretty amazing.
Wow.
That's what I want to do.
That's the next step for you. Like, you go motorbikes, squirrel suit,
helicopters.
Oh shit. Well, son, I'm glad you came on with this and let us ask you all these fucking retarded questions.
We're definitely gonna need a part two.
So, son, thanks for being on Machinist Therapy Hotline episode 20. We really appreciate that you took the time out of your day to come and talk to us misfits. Is there anything you'd like to say for the last passing comment before we end today's episode?
Nope, I don't think I do.
Well, that's perfect. So, until next time, everybody, we'll see you then. Bye-bye.
Bye.